Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Now we continue our year-long series, 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks, in which we're welcoming every member of the New York City Council, touching every neighborhood of the city in this year in which a majority of the council is new because of term limits and it's majority female for the first time ever. Today, we're joined by another one of those freshman woman members, Council Member Shahana Hanif from District 39, which includes parts of Kensington, Borough Park, Windsor Terrace, Park Slope, Gowanus, Carroll Gardens, Cobble Hill, and the Columbia Waterfront. I think I've got them all. Council Member Shahana Hanif made history by being the first Muslim woman elected to the New York City Council and by being the first woman to represent her district, first woman of any kind. Hanif was born and raised in her city council district, District 39, to Bangladeshi immigrant parents. She describes herself as a CUNY alum, a feminist organizer, lupus survivor, and cat mom. And Hanif is the chair of the City Council's Immigration Committee, so relevant right now. And we're going to start on that with the busloads of migrants arriving in New York, seemingly by the day. She is also co-chair of the New York City Council Progressive Caucus. Council Member Hanif, so nice to have you. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much, Brian. And I just want to say you are a legend, a New York City icon, and I'm just so excited to be in conversation with you this morning.
Oh, people on the radio can't see you blush, but you made me blush. So let me start on this issue, and then we'll back up, and I'll ask you about your background generally and let people get to know you a little bit as a new face on City Council. But you told us off the air that immigration and the asylum seeker crisis is one of your biggest priorities. So can you talk about what you and your team are doing on that front?
Yeah, absolutely. It's relevant, and I know New Yorkers are watching as we continue to welcome busloads of asylum seekers. We're over 13,000 now, and I know we share the same values in ensuring dignified housing for them and wraparound services for them. And so this coming Friday, I'm hosting a oversight hearing to better understand the administration's operations and how exactly we will ensure that every single asylum seeker is cared for. Days leading up to this hearing, we learned about a young mother, a woman who completed suicide. And so I'm going to try to better understand exactly what mental health services and how they are reaching this new community in our city, and if services are being offered in the languages that they are comfortable speaking. Mm. And then we also learned about the creation of a tent city in Orchard Beach, an isolated part of our city, a flood-prone area in our city, and a transportation desert. And so want to understand exactly how this administration is anticipating housing these asylum seekers, and much, much more. So I'll have some FaceTime with the Office of Emergency Management, the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs, representatives from the Department of Social Services. And I really want to cover a full range of issues to see exactly how the council and this administration can continue to work together. This should be a coordinated effort, and also to call upon our state and federal partners to support us. We need more funding to care for asylum seekers, and action to stop the flow of buses without coordination. So there's much, much to learn and then push for.
Is your concern about the tent city more that it's tents and you see them as inappropriate shelter? Of course, the mayor says, well, with 14,000 coming in such a short amount of time, they don't have the shelter space in the traditional sense. They don't have the hotel rooms, so the tents are what they can do and that they'll be well equipped and it's humane. Or is it more the location in Orchard Beach? I know Orchard Beach. I've gone to the beach at Orchard Beach. I've taken the bus, the BX12, to Orchard Beach to go to the beach. And you're right. It is a transportation desert. You have to get on that bus and go for a ways before you get to a subway line. And so if the asylum seekers who are living there for a while were going to find jobs, that would be a tough commute or other kinds of services, shopping, et cetera. So is it more the location or is it more the tents, which I think get more press, or is it both?
All of that. Absolutely all of that. And we should be concerned that the mayor is using this facility to undermine our city's right to shelter laws. And that is what I want to lift up in this hearing. Our city's right to shelter laws mandate that beds must be 3 feet apart for congregate settings. And of course, congregate shelter is also an issue here too. And from what I saw in the photo that has been shared around what this will look like, it doesn't look like the beds are 3 feet apart. So there is a challenge here, and I find it problematic that the mayor might be circumventing and going around our city's right to shelter laws. We should be working our hardest to make sure that folks who are in shelter are with a plan to be moved into permanent affordable housing. And on the policy level, we should be working swiftly and urgently to legalize basement apartments. There's so much to be done here. And our city is one where, one, we've got the right to shelter, and two, the right to guaranteed housing should be our biggest priority here.
Let me ask you one more thing on this issue before we move on. I don't know if you saw that the New York Post had a story yesterday with the headline, just 1 in 5 migrants in New York City are from Texas Governor Greg Abbott, despite Eric Adams' blame. And it says Abbott's office told the Post Friday that they had bused some 2,700 migrants to the city since August 5th, but then goes on to say the number of migrants Abbott bused to the city pales in comparison to the 4,230 that the Democratic mayor of El Paso, Oscar Leeser's office, confirmed Friday had been sent by his administration in an agreement with Adams. Are you aware of that agreement between Adams and the mayor of El Paso, a Democrat, to have 4,000 of these 14,000 migrants come here?
I'm not aware, but what I can say is that I've been to the Port Authority every week, at least once or twice during the week, very early in the morning, to welcome busloads of families with very young kids. Who are confused and terrified and traumatized from this journey post fleeing their homeland. And so right now, the political games that are being played, whether that be here in our city to the southern states and particularly by Governor Abbott in Texas, has real human implications. And for me, as the Immigration Committee Chair, as a daughter of immigrants, my father, upon arrival, was undocumented. This is very personal to me. And so I'm not looking at the political pawning that's happening right now. I'm looking at the lives of these people who need our support and care.
My guest, if you're just joining us, is New York City Council Member Shahana Hanif, who represents District 39, including parts of Kensington, Borough Park, Windsor Terrace, Park Slope, Gowanus, Carroll Gardens, Cobble Hill, and more. We can take some phone calls for her at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. So now let me back off the particular issue and invite you as a new member of council this year to tell people a little more about your background. You just mentioned a little bit of it, but where did you grow up and what first got you interested in politics or public service?
Sure, thank you for that. I am a lifelong first-generation Bangladeshi Brooklynite. born in Kensington, which I now proudly represent. Kensington is home to the largest Bangladeshi Muslim working class community in Brooklyn. And it's an honor to, to one, have the opportunity to talk about Bangladeshis. We are everywhere. We are delivery workers, we are domestic workers, we are at your Dunkin'. And so to have this space and representation in City Hall is so, so meaningful to my community. I grew up in a household of three sisters. We were all rebellious, and my parents really struggled raising rebellious feminist daughters. And I came into politics through lupus. I was diagnosed at 17 as I was entering my senior year in high school. And that really changed everything. I, you know, dreamed of leaving Brooklyn. I dreamed of leaving the city and the sort of chains of patriarchy and surveillance within a very conservative Muslim community. And lupus basically was like, nope, you're not going anywhere. And it drew me into my community to really ask the questions around how do we care for one another, and how does this city care for immigrant kids and folks with disabilities. And so through the journey of lupus, I have been a health justice advocate, pushing for better care in our very nebulous healthcare system, which was really challenging for my parents. I was uninsured when I was diagnosed, and then to translate and interpret lupus and all of the ways in which it would impact my body and then our entire family and community was tough. And so over the years, I've learned how to read and write and articulate in Bangla, which is an important tool for me in my organizing. I then went on to becoming a tenant organizer at an organization in the Lower East Side, working to build power of Bangladeshi and other Asian public housing residents, to then coming into working in government when Trump was elected at my predecessor, then former council member Brad Lander's office, which really transformed everything for me, where I got to see the insides of how very few women of color are leading the conversations around the legislative decisions and processes, to the makeup of the city council at large, where at the time, 10 or 11 women out of 51 were in the city council. And so when leaders and community members and neighbors called on me to run for the seat, I took it very seriously. I took it with a lot of great responsibility, and now I'm the council member.
And now you're the council member with that background, with lupus, as you said, getting you into politics in the first place, and with an interest, as you told us off the air the other day, in healthcare policy as one of your central interests, and you were just referring to it here on the air too. And I see that one of your legislative priorities in this area is paid sick leave for gig workers. So can you talk about that, known as Intro 617?
Absolutely. Oh, this would be historic. So right now, our current paid sick and safe leave only applies to workers classified as employees and exempts independent contractors or gig workers. And so what this legislation would do is expand paid sick and safe to at least 140,000 of our app-based workers, such as delivery workers, Uber and Lyft drivers, Instacart shoppers. And this would be transformative. This is a labor justice issue. And then the safe leave part is a gender justice component of this legislation that would allow for anybody who is harmed by domestic violence or other gender-based violence has time to pay time to take off and safety plan or whatever else they need to do in order to be safe. And so this is going to be a fight. And one of the biggest components or questions I get is like, who is going to pay for this? And the onus would entirely be on these companies, these multi multi-million dollar companies that continue to exploit workers. Last year, some of these major companies made over $2 trillion. So the money is absolutely there. We began COVID clamoring pots and pans, clapping for essential workers. This is how we really appreciate and look after essential workers who keep this city running, who, for me, at least with the delivery workers, one, are a big constituency in my district. We've seen a growth of Bangladeshi and Latinx delivery workers who, one, live here, but also serve this entire city. They've been dying due to our very dangerous street infrastructure and so much more. And they've had to risk their health because they don't have any paid time off. And so continued working through COVID and have been an extension to our favorite parts of the city, including restaurants. And so we owe it to every single worker to get paid when they're taking time off.
Let's take a few phone calls. And of course, we started this segment talking about the asylum seeker crisis, and we're getting a few calls on that. So let's go to Lou on Staten Island. You're on WNYC with New York City Council Member Shahana Hanif from Brooklyn. Hi, Lou.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Good morning, ma'am. I heard your concern being expressed for these people, and rightly so, because at one time I knew people who were in their shoes. But my question is there room in your district to take some of them, and are you and your voters ready to do so? Because it's one thing to express concern for them, but another thing is to help the rest of the city or the administration in housing them. So that's my question to you. Do you have a space in your district? Are you and your voters willing to take some?
Thank you, Lou.
That's a great question, and absolutely yes. Yeah.
Simply yes. So are you doing anything?
Yes, and this is our responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing anything toward that end?
So right now, several of the shelters that are in district have been welcoming families, and I've been in touch with our shelters here and our schools to make sure that I have a better understanding of the resources that are missing and ways to engage my broader constituency. And in fact, every single day, we hear from constituents around ways that they can step up to support these new neighbors of ours. So right now I'm still doing an assessment of exactly how many families we'll continue to welcome and what the needs are. We're trying to convene with the support of our District 15 school superintendent, a district-wide clothing swap. We know that families need clothing, they need metro cards and access to food. So I feel responsible to ensure that folks who are coming into my district have access to what they need, and that the mutual aid organizations and existing food pantry organizations and other community-based partners, which have also been on the ground at Port Authority, like Mesteca and Make the Road and others, are continuing this partnership at our local neighborhoods. And then, of course, broadly, you know, I would love to welcome new shelters or emergency housing here. But the bigger issue for me is to make sure that our apartments are also being utilized. Vacant apartments are being utilized, that the city's voucher program is reaching asylum seekers, and that they are able to find housing. And, you know, I spoke to this earlier in our conversation, Brian, about legalizing basements. And I have a resolution in the council calling on the state to pass and implement legalized basement apartments. This would really be for the health and housing access for all New Yorkers, but particularly meeting this necessary need right now. So a lot is in the works, and I appreciate the question. And for me, the answer will always be yes.
Legalizing basement apartments, even though Hurricane Ida taught us how vulnerable basement apartments are in storms that are going to become increasingly frequent because of climate change?
Yeah, we can regulate basement apartments to ensure that they're appropriately retrofitted to withstand future flooding. Right now, we know that many, many New Yorkers are illegally living in basement apartments, mm-hmm. and those were impacted by Ida. We're living in basement units. So this is something for us to move on with great speed.
Ed on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC with Councilmember Hanif. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Brian. First of all, I heard the council person say something about getting people MetroCards. The fact of the matter is, as you well know, Brian, thousands and thousands and thousands of people aren't using their MetroCard. They're using the transit system for nothing. This is part of the huge, huge, huge deficit the MTA has. You're doing a great public service with these interviews, Brian. I haven't heard one interview with a council person who is a moderate or centrist Democrat.
Then you haven't been listening, because we're going district by district in order. And we had Councilmember Holden, we had Councilmember Palladino. So we're taking them as they come. You know, New York City Council is a very liberal body, but we're having them all, and they're all expressing their views.
I have no objection to that, Brian. I'm just saying there's a pattern here. I think you're doing a public service, and frankly, both, DeSantis and the governor of Texas are very annoying and are very, doing a disservice. But if they were smart, they'd be recording part of your interviews with the city council. Because if there ever was an indication that there's no limits to the number of amnesty seekers that can be sent to, cities like New York and San Francisco, it's totally reflected in the interview with the current city council person you're interviewing.
Go ahead.
The amount of money that... Yeah, I just want to say something, Brian.
Go ahead.
My impression is the only time, basically, you pursue the issue of costs with any of these people is when it comes to these kinds of people who can be characterized as victims. The minute anybody talks about providing more resources to the police department, that's when you go into, developing a line about the hidden costs, the real costs to the city. Can we afford more in terms of the police department?
Right. Ed, I'm going to leave it there. I'm also going to defend the way we run this show and say we definitely talk about public opinion being on the side of police funding and robust police funding. That's why Eric Adams was elected in large part. We have covered that robustly. And when it comes to funding services for migrants and a lot of other things, we definitely do ask about costs. And so I'll ask you about costs right now, Councilmember Hanif. What about the burden on the city? Is there a limit? And this is really a national context, too. If Democrats all over the country are saying, come on in, asylum seekers, as many as come, we want to house you and give you services. What does that cost in the case of the city of New York, which is what you're responsible for as a council member?
Right. So, one, I agree that we need the support at a national level. The city and our administration, as I mentioned some of the critiques I have or where I'd like to see improvement, I also recognize the hard work that our city agencies like emergency management, immigrant affairs, social services are doing day in, day out to support the over 13,000 asylum seekers who are already here. We need our state and federal partners to step up in helping fund our city's efforts. And then we've got a budget modification coming up in November where the council will have a better understanding of exactly how much the city will need in order to support asylum seekers and guaranteeing wraparound services. And at my hearing this Friday, I'll be asking some of these budgetary questions to get some more clarity, and particularly in the creation of the tent city in Orchard Beach. I'm very curious about what the costs associated are with this new facility, and then how this will interact or interface with the creation of the navigation center, which I got to tour earlier this month. And so there are costs here and implications, and you know, that's why I've got the authority of this hearing, oversight hearing, where I'll be able to get better understanding.
And so just one more follow-up on this, and the caller from the Lower East Side will know, if he does listen to the show regularly, that I've asked this question many times. Does Greg Abbott not have a certain point to make, which is, if by the accident of geography, Texas is on the border where so many asylum seekers are coming in, Texas shouldn't have to bear the brunt of those costs for those services by itself, and the asylum seekers should be distributed or distributing themselves, or there should be some national program so that Texas doesn't have the brunt of that all by itself?
Well, that's not how the governor is contextualizing what's happening here. And asylum seekers in Texas are being treated like animals. They're not being seen as whole human beings. And so what the governor is doing out there is inhumane, unjust. And so it's been critical for us at Port Authority, one, for me to show up as an elected official in the city and to be in partnership with Commissioner Castro from the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs and welcome with smiles and handshakes and with the resources on the ground, because that's not what they're receiving out there.
So last question, and to end on a lighter note, as you know, in our 51 council members in 52-week series, we're inviting everyone to bring a show-and-tell item from your district, something that you know well but that others around our listening area might not know very well and that you would like them to know about. So what is your show-and-tell item from District 39?
I am bringing this morning my auntie, Monawara Begum, and all the aunties who've helped raise me, who've worked so hard to raise families and a strong community in Kensington and in Little Bangladesh. I come from powerful, gritty roots, and even though I've had tension and conflict with aunties at the doors during my campaign trail, Monawara auntie would always begin her pitch with, "It's our moral obligation to elect Shahana," or she would say, "It's our duty to elect our daughter." And so just this act of courage and what I think democracy will be in our city, what democracy is in our city, just shows how our community came together for my win and the diversity of communities that banded together to support a anti-racist feminist a feminist government, to fighting for a much more representative democracy where women and women of color lead us.
Councilmember Shahana Hanif from District 39, which includes parts of Kensington Borough Park, Windsor Terrace, Park Slope, Gowanus, Carroll Gardens, Cobble Hill, and more. Thank you so much for joining 51 council members in 52 weeks.
Thank you. Have an amazing day.